Missouri. 1-800-449-8686.
When did you start Christmas Courier?
Christmas Courier, Phil, was started last Christmas, and we're having another great year. And on behalf of myself and our 50 employees, another very busy year.
Now, you guys deliver letters, at least you say you deliver Christmas letters straight to Santa Claus, right?
We do something that the United States Mail, Federal Express, UPS, we do something none of them can do. We guarantee that a child's Christmas letter will get into the hands of Santa Claus. We charge about a dollar more, but we offer the greatest guarantee a child would want at Christmas, and that's that your letter will get into the hands of Santa Claus.
All right, now obviously you're not delivering them to Santa Claus, right?
Well, no, but this is part of the showmanship of what we do. This is part of creating the illusion for the kids. And when you come over to our Christmas Courier offices, everybody dressed in Christmas costumes, and we have mistletoe and we have candy canes for the kids. It gives the illusion, but we guarantee that your letter will get to Santa Claus.
Yeah, but what do you tell the parents who have questions?
Well, Phil, we make every effort to bring alive the spirit and the illusion of Christmas, that these letters are going to go to Santa. Our Christmas Courier office, as I said, is decorated. The sign says the only mail service that guarantees your Santa Claus letter will be delivered, because the post office, frankly, lies. They say they'll deliver the letters, but they don't. And I think the kids are entitled to hear this. I think the kids are entitled to hear...
You tell the kids that the post office lies?
I think they're entitled to know that. I think it's been too long, and I think it has been a long time coming for the children to know that the post office is lying to them. Their letters don't get delivered to Santa Claus.
Yeah, but the letters that you deliver don't get delivered to Santa Claus.
But we tell them that we guarantee they will. See, a child wants the illusion. And if we create a better illusion than the post office...
The post office says we'll deliver your letters to Santa Claus. You guys...
We guarantee it.
All right, well, you guys say you guarantee it, but neither one of you are doing it.
But we point out to the post... We point out to the kids that at least the post office is not even making an effort at it. These kids have been through enough. They've been through 9/11. They've been through every kind of hell that a kid can be put through. We guarantee those letters are going to get to Santa Claus. If they don't, they don't. But why don't we do something a little bit more than just taking it, and some guy wearing a post office uniform who looks like he couldn't be bothered, who looks as if he probably in another life was laying on a street someplace up against the warm wall of a bakery with an overcoat that he bought at Salvation Army that he pulls over his head for a tent. I'm talking about our Christmas Courier business and the fact that we guarantee that those letters...
No, but you're everything that you said aside, you're not delivering the letters to Santa Claus any more than the post office does.
But we tell the kids we make a great effort.
How do you make an effort?
Well, let me explain something. You heard lately that we have any anthrax in our business? No, you don't. And I think the post office had a little problem with that a year and a half ago. Thank you. Thank you.
So the public.
Well, you can stutter and stumble all you want, Mr. Henry.
No, the public mails, the U.S. mail, is subject to all kinds of things. You guys simply take kids' Christmas letters, and you don't do anything with them.
But we tell the children they'll go to Santa Claus.
But you guys don't deliver. You guys don't deliver anything.
Mr. Henry, I got a business here that endeavors to create an illusion for a child. If you think that's funny.
I certainly do not, sir. But I see the post office making an effort to deliver mail.
The post office does not deliver mail to Santa Claus.
Neither do you.
But we create a better illusion for the kids.
All right. Then what you're charging the extra dollar for, you charge $17 for what you say an overnight delivery to the North Pole.
That's right.
Federal Express charges $13 to $15, and they actually do send something overnight.
Well, they don't send anything to Santa Claus. And I'll tell you something else. They'll take your letter to Santa Claus. You can address it, Santa Claus, North Pole, Federal Express will take your money.
Are you sure of that?
I'm pretty sure.
All right, we're talking to Robert Green here, and he is talking to us about his business, Christmas Courier. They guarantee they deliver their letters to Santa Claus. Even though you don't. But,
yeah, but I think you're overlooking what I have repeatedly said. This is for the kids. This is for the kids. If there's an adult that wants to create
an illusion that Santa really gets it overnight,
right,
then they'll bring the stuff here.
That's right, and bring the kids. Doesn't it do any good if the adult comes? And I've had adults walk in and say, I got this letter from my kid to Santa Claus, and I'll say, well, where's the kid? And he'll say, the kid's at home or at school, and I'll say, well, there's no point because this doesn't really go to Santa Claus.
Oh, I see. So in other words, this is an illusion, as you said.
Yes, it's an illusion for the kid, and it's only $17.
So it's theater.
Yes, you could call it theater, you could call it performance art, call it anything you want, but it's a large place where we come and we create the illusion that we have elves working in the back. And I've got a very dear friend, Sid Seymour, who is from Central Florida and has a number of these, I don't know, you know, the midgets that he knows that have come to work for me. I don't want to be politically incorrect.
Well, I guess they're called small people.
Small
or little people, my producer's saying.
Little people. All right. He has these who are friends of his, and we hire some of these. So we create the illusion, and that's a lot of fun for us.
All right, Robert, the other question I have for you has more to do with...
Anyway, one other thing. They dance around. That's the other thing. When a kid hands them a letter, we get them to dance and go up and down. You see what I'm saying? So this is...
Who? The small people?
Right.
All right, so it's a bit of...
It's a bit of theater. Big deal. $17 so you can make your kid feel better. And I got people busting my chops because you don't really deliver it to Santa Claus.
Here's my problem. You have signs that say, give us your letter to Santa Claus, we won't make him sick with anthrax, don't you?
No, we do not have signs.
Well, there's somehow the kids get the message that you guys say, give us the letter to Santa Claus, he won't get anthrax.
Well, the mails do deliver mail that has anthrax in it.
Not their fault.
Hey, you know what? Whatever. I'm not interested. I don't want to use their service. You know, you want to use their service? Use their service. You want to make Santa Claus sick with anthrax? Do it.
They're not going to make Santa Claus sick, though. I think it's unfair. I realize you're creating an illusion, but I think it's unfair to give the impression to a child that the United States Post Office can kill Santa Claus. Don't you think that's unfair?
I think what is fair is that a child finally gets a break in this world and gets that beautiful illusion that Santa Claus is really going to get his letter instead of it being taken by some guy in blue slacks and thrown into a garbage can.
All right. 1-800-449-8686 is our number. You guys do something with the letters, too, don't you?
Yes, we do, and we do that for the benefit of our employees.
All right. Well, you call that the benefit of your employees.
I'm not making a claim, Mr. Henry. We do.
Well, that may be, but apparently you take these letters and you take them back to your lunchroom.
That's true.
And then what?
And then we do something for you. You're trying to set me up as if this is a bad thing.
Go ahead. What do you do with them?
We're very proud of what we do with the Santa Claus letters. Once the child gives us the letter, it goes back to our lunchroom. We open them up. We sit around and have lunch. Somebody brings in a six-pack or whatever, and we read the letters, and the one who has the...
According to the comments you made to my producer, the one who finds the stupidest letter wins.
I don't think I used the word stupidest.
That's what the word Janice said that you used.
Well, she's not telling the truth.
Well, what word did you use?
The one who finds the I think I used the word dumbest request of Santa Claus.
All right. These children bring their letters to your business. You guarantee you're going to deliver them to Santa Claus, and what you wind up doing is you sit around in a lunchroom reading them.
Yeah, and we do it for the benefit of our employees.
So that they're relaxed and they have a good time.
Yes. I mean, what is your question?
Well, the guy that won last year was what?
The guy that won last year was Bill Nelson, and he found a letter from a kid who, get a load of this, he wanted a new kidney for his mother, and I thought that was amusing.
Why would you find that amusing?
Mr. Henry, if I could, no kid is going to get a kidney from Santa Claus.
I completely understand that, but that's a child who is requesting something for his mother.
A kidney? Well, that's a hot one. What else?
Well, you know he's not going to get it.
I know he isn't going to get it, and I know that the letter isn't going to get to Santa Claus. I'm doing this for the kids so they think the letter's getting to Santa Claus. There was another letter. Tell me this isn't funny. Some kid wanted his dad out of prison. Tell me that isn't funny.
I think it's a little kid who wants more than something for himself.
You know what we did with the letter?
And what about this employee who got drunk and sent the kid a pig kidney?
Mr. Hendrick.
What about him?
He was fired, and you know that. You didn't have to ask that question.
All right, well, Mr. Green, I believe that your business is probably a nice piece of theater, as you call it, but I don't think that it's right to sit around and read the letters.
Some of them are really dumb. I got to tell you.
Well, some of them are written, they're all written by kids.
But listen to this. Here's a kid who wants a horse, you know, wants a car. You say that the kids are not being selfish. Here's a kid who asked for a horse, another kid who asked for a car. Here's another kid who asked for a new house for them to live in. All of these things, there is no way in the name of God and all of his angels that they're going to get this, and yet the kid is asking for it. What we do is we pass them out at the company cocktail party, and within 15 minutes, someone finds the funniest letter, they win a cash prize. I don't think it's dumb, I don't think it's stupid, but that's what they do. Now, here's one here. Some kid wanted I forget what this is, but he wanted an airplane. Now, can you imagine...
Because the kid thinks Santa Claus can get him an airplane.
Oh, yeah, sure. Can you imagine a kid asking...
Because he thinks Santa Claus will get him an airplane.
Well, it's idiotic. So we sit around and have some laughs.
All right, Bob, I just think...
You know, here's the thing, Mr. Henry, if I could just say this. Why don't you loosen up? Why don't you let the lower part of your body breathe a little bit? Why don't you just have some fun with this? What we're talking about is a business that is going to send a letter to Santa Claus. Whether it gets there or not, who cares? The kid believes that it will. We sit in the back and we have some fun with these stupid letters. Period.
And you're making money.
You're damn right. What do you think I'm doing this for free? You think I'm doing it for my health? We're doing something good. You're trying to make it into something bad.
I don't think your intentions are all...
Oh, come on. What... So a guy that opens up a business, his intentions have got to be pure. If you want to make money, you want to make money. And yes, we are doing stuff for the kids, creating the illusion that Santa Claus is getting their letter. And anybody that doesn't like it, they don't have to use our business. You can stick the letter in the U.S. mail, and it can, you know, go off into some trash bin someplace. Our letters, at least, first of all, the kid thinks it's getting to Santa Claus because we say it's guaranteed. Secondly, we're getting a couple of laughs out of it. But I guess for a guy like you, that's no good.
Well, I just think sitting around and laughing at the fact that a kid wants his father home from the war or he wants a new kidney...
Well, it may be in bad taste, but the fact is the kid doesn't know we're laughing about it. The parents don't know we're laughing about it. We're having a couple of laughs. I'm making a good business. Not a great business, but a good business. I can't pay my people that much. A man who is born with a congenital condition that makes him a dwarf doesn't get a lot of kicks out of this world, Mr. Henry, or haven't you heard? And maybe reading some kid's stupid little letter about how he wants a horse, or how he wants his dad back from the war, or how he wants peace on earth, maybe it gives this midget some laughs. You give a midget a couple of laughs, I think that's doing some good things. Or what do you think? Maybe you disagree? Maybe you want to judge me?
I'm not trying to judge you, sir. What I am saying, though, is in giving that, quote, midget a couple of laughs, a child somehow is being mocked. And I guess I...
Oh, a child is being mocked. A child is having some fun thinking their letter is guaranteed overnight to Santa.
Well, I suppose in your way you are doing a service for the kids, but...
See, here's where you get into a problem. Everybody thinks that kids, you can't have fun with kids. Everyone thinks that you're not allowed to laugh at kids. You must laugh with them. We laugh at kids. We just don't let them know it.
All right, well, Robert Green is with... it's called... Christmas Courier. They guarantee that your letter will get to Santa Claus overnight. In point of fact, it never gets to Santa Claus. It's read by his staff of workers, some of whom are midgets, and they get a big laugh out of the fact that the kids want dialysis machines and horses.
And employees at the post office, they tell kids if they mail a letter, Santa will, you know... Okay.
All right. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Kittens are tasty.
The Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
What happened there?
I don't know. I saw one of the people who dropped a box or something.
Robert Green with us. He's with Christmas Courier. 1-800-449-8686. They guarantee that your letter will get to Santa Claus, even though it doesn't get to Santa Claus. And that's not breaking the guarantee.
No, because the adults know that we're not sending it to Santa Claus. You don't have to. You don't have to tell the truth to a kid. There's nothing in the law that says that. The adult is the one you got to tell the truth to.
Here is Steve. Steve, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
How you doing, Phil?
Fine.
I think that I just want to give you my comments on this. I think the Santa Claus letter thing is a fraud. I think there is no guarantee because they're winding up in the same trash as the U.S. Post Office. And I think this guy is preying on children to fatten up his bank account, nothing more than that.
Well, if you don't know the law, you don't know the law. I don't know what to say to this guy.
What do you mean?
He doesn't understand.
Well, tell me what I don't understand.
I just got done telling you that the only people that got to know are the parents, and they know that it ain't getting to Santa Claus. Or maybe you would like to sue me because your letter didn't get to Santa Claus. You want to go into a courtroom, sir, and say you mailed a letter to Santa Claus and didn't get there? You'd be laughed out of it.
I'd like to go to the Better Business Bureau and find out why the definition of guarantee is not being adhered to.
The Better Business Bureau couldn't shut down a doghouse. They got no legal right or nothing. What about the midgets that I employ?
The midgets, you call them.
Well, the little people that I employ. And what about the kids that I make happy?
You do it fraudulently. You don't make little kids happy.
When you tell a kid there's a Santa Claus, you're doing that fraudulently too, Charlie.
But I usually give the money to the post office. You're knocking the U.S. Post Office.
I'm not giving money to the post office. You are, by mailing a letter to Santa Claus.
And you tell kids that give a letter to the post office and they can give anthrax
to Santa Claus. See, that's the part
that's real neat.
That's the part that I...
it wasn't me that put the anthrax in the mail. The U.S. Post Office got a bunch
of
people sick.
You are nothing but ripping off the adults and lying to the kids.
You work for the post office?
No, I don't work for the post office.
Well, then why do you care?
I don't like to see people like you take advantage of other good people.
Here's the thing. The post office actually does something. You don't do anything.
Well, how do you do that?
Well, no, you don't deliver mail.
No, we don't deliver mail. I never claim to deliver mail except to the kids. They're the only ones that think I deliver mail. And am I wrong or am I right when I say that the post office sent anthrax through its mail? Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
Okay, then I'm not saying anything wrong.
But it's okay to lie to kids.
Lie to kids?
That's what you're doing. You're lying to them by telling them that you're delivering their letters and you guarantee it.
You're lying to them by telling them that there is such a guy as Santa Claus.
I don't tell them anything. Yeah. I don't lie to them.
Parents
you,
lie to
you're
kids
lying
all the time.
To the kids.
And the other thing that I wanted to mention here is that it's true that they sent anthrax to the mail and they could kill Santa Claus. And that's
you're nothing but a you're nothing
right, well,
but a ripoff.
I'm a ripoff, huh?
Let
me tell you something. If your kid the next time anthrax goes through the mail and your kid says to you, Daddy, I don't want to send it through the mail because it might kill Santa Claus, he'll want you to bring it over to Christmas Courier. I may not let you in the store.
Well, that would be just fine. Rip it off the public.
1-800-449-8686.
Yeah, get out of here.
Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Extremism. Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686.
Pastor Renick, how are you doing?
I'm good, Phil. How are you?
Great. I wanted to bring you on to talk about your Christmas pageant.
That's going to be on the week of the week of the 20th. That will be from Christmas time, actually, the Saturday, Sunday before Christmas. That'll go all the way through the week. And we encourage people to come to Joyful Union Congregation, Bellflower, California, for our Christmas pageant. We will reenact the life of Jesus, and more to the point, we are going to reenact the birth and the young life of Jesus Christ.
Well, you're to the point at hand, you're going to be in a diaper.
I'm not going to be in a diaper, Phil. I'm going to be wrapped in a... You see, when you begin to say things like that, people think it's a joke.
You're not in a diaper, but you're going to be laying in the manger yourself?
Yes, I am. And let me explain before you try to make a joke out of this.
I don't really want to make a joke out of it, but I do need for you to explain why you're laying in a manger wrapped in what? In swaddling clothes?
In swaddling clothes, yes. Which is a very tight shawl that is wrapped about the body from the shoulders to the feet. And the reason why I'm doing this is to show people the young life of Jesus and to show people the reality of the life of a pastor, the life of the shepherd of a flock. That is my life. As the representative of Jesus Christ.
Right.
On this earth.
Well,
And everybody. Everybody. Need to understand that if you go to church,
yeah,
standing before the flock is a man that represents the life of the blood of the Lamb. And anything I can do to bring the life of that man to my congregation, I will do.
And that includes wrapping yourself up and laying in a manger as Jesus.
That includes reenacting and creating the life of the blood of the Lamb.
Is the
life of the blood of the Lamb! He got on the cross and died for you.
Right.
Died on the cross!
Well,
nail to a cross! Nail to a cross! We live in a visual society. I'm sorry, Phil, I don't want to interrupt you.
Well, I just...
But I got to tell you, the only way we understand is by visual. And that's what I'm giving my congregation, a visual of Christ as a baby. I lay in a manger, lay there like the blood of the Lamb, all wrapped up in swaddling clothes, looking at the people going by. And in so doing, create the life of Jesus.
Yep.
Later on, they nailed his ass to a cross. But on Christmas Day, with the three wise men standing there, scratching their ass, I don't know, they probably didn't know why they were there. And I'll tell you something else, Phil. The Bible says nothing, nothing about three wise men. Only one, or two, three, four. It said the wise men.
So do you?
No, we don't have no three wise men. We got four. Because they can kiss my ass on Main Street on the county line if they think I'm going to buy into that three wise men bit. Forget it. Four.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you can. I'm sorry, Phil. I get enthusiastic.
I understand that. But my question is, you wrapping yourself up in swaddling clothes and laying in a large manger to be Jesus, does that not mock? I don't mean that.
No, Phil, it doesn't mock Jesus.
I don't mean that to insult you, but would some people think that?
No, Jesus has a baby. No, it does not. What it does is it shows my true role on this earth, and it shows the living Lamb. My true role on this earth is as a pastor, and as a pastor, I am the representative of Jesus Christ. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? I'm saying that as a pastor of a church, I am the only representative. representative of Jesus Christ on this earth. You do not represent Jesus Christ. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
I do. Me. And that's why I get into the swaddling clothes. That's why we do our Christmas pageant. I do Jesus in the world of business.
That's when you wear a business suit and you're Jesus?
Yes. That's exactly right. Jesus speaks through me. Jesus was the Son of God. He was the vessel through which God spoke. Well, now Jesus is gone. Nailed to a cross. Pulled him down and stuck him in a cave. 3 days later, rolled away the stone, and he ascended to heaven. I'm the shepherd now. The church is my flock. I'm as a shepherd like Jesus is a shepherd. The only difference between me and Jesus is that if you nailed me to a cross, I'd die up there and I won't be coming back.
All right, so this is Christmas week?
This will be on Christmas week, December 20th. Now, I know that there are people who think that I am mocking Jesus, as you said. These are wannabe deacons who are jealous of my creative approach to the life of Jesus.
Right.
I know it's unusual.
Well,
I know it's never been done before.
Well,
as I lay there, people are going to come by, look down and say, look at that. I'm sorry, Phil. I had Braunschweiger sandwiches and all afternoon it's been coming up. But if I want to lay in a manger in a diaper, I will. If I want to slap on a diaper, lay in a manger, stare up at someone's ugly kisser going by, who's to say I can't? I built this church with my bare hands.
Well, that's true.
That you go, you GD, right, it's true. I built this church.
I know that you did, and you, you've put up with a lot to keep that church going down there.
I put up with everything to keep this church going. I have people criticizing me for the fact they can use their bank debit card to contribute to the church. I had people criticizing me because we had a very graphic exploding manger 1 year to show the perils of terrorism. I had people criticizing me because I bought a gun with a silver bullet to try to keep the werewolves at bay. One Halloween night. I had people criticizing me because I thought the best way to take a child and get her some money because her mother is a drug addict and a crack addict was to get her a breast enhancement. And maybe get that booty padded out too. Those who have the courage, those lambs in my congregation who are strong can come forward and hold me. They can hold me in their arms. And they can hold me just like they can hold Jesus Christ.
Are you preaching?
You damn right I'm telling you what's up. You ever put your arms around Jesus? Phil, you ever done that?
No, sir.
You can't a joyful congregation? You could come down and put your arms around the Christ. And if I'm in that manger wearing a diaper, who's to know?
Well, you are you're a passionate man.
I am a passionate man. And I tell you, Phil, the beauty of what we're going to be doing Christmas week is there is a flat donation. $6.95, and you will partake of Christmas week, the pageant week, the Joyful Union Congregation week, and you can put your arms around Jesus Christ for only $6.95. And I allow the young women to come forward and hold me so they'll know when they become a mother how to hold a baby. And I like to reference back to something that happened last year. If I get an erection, that's my business, not yours.
Yes, sir.
That's right.
I appreciate you coming on with me.
I'm always very excited to be on the Phil Henry Show because I think you allow a forum that other radio shows don't allow, Phil. So I do appreciate it.
Well, I thank you very much, Pastor, and I know that... some people say that you are extreme.
Well, you know something? I don't care what people say. I only care what the Lord says. I only care what Jesus says. I only care, well, I only care about getting souls into heaven. I don't care what people who are unsaved think of me. I don't care what people who are led by the devil think of me. I allow the young mothers to lower their blouse and feel the Christ their Lord nuzzle on the great breast of motherhood. And you think I care about what people think about that? You can kiss my ass on the county line of Main Street at high noon.
All right. Pastor Renick, a pleasure.
My pleasure, Phil. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Christmas week, the Christmas pageant, all the week of December. What's it, Genesis said December the 20th? Starts December the 20th. I think that's a Friday. All that week through Christmas at Joyful Union Congregation. It's in Bellflower, California. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. We eat kittens. Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Jay Sanos was on our program on Friday. Jay is he's a brigadier admiral with the Citizens Auxiliary Police. And, of course, you can pick up one of his T-shirts at our website, philhendryshow.com. He wants a ban on Christmas trees because Christmas trees can impale babies. It could, like a branch could go right through a throat. I think he saw a guy toss a kid at a Christmas tree once, and the kid just sort of stuck there. Here's Jay.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
We can stand by as police assist organizations and not do anything and witness these emergency rooms full of children with no eyes or a child with both eyes gouged out or tree branches that have gone right through their throats. And really the most tragic Christmas I ever spent was a Christmas where we were at the home of a couple that had had an argument. And the Citizens Auxiliary Police, we were driving by in the van, we saw police agencies, we stopped, and the husband, apparently, they'd had an argument. The husband had picked up a newborn child, a newborn baby, and threw the kid at the tree. And...
yeah.
And the kid stuck on the tree with a tree branch.
Why would you laugh at that?
I'm not, Phil. I'm crying. I'm just, it's very emotional.
Good God.
The kid was stuck there like an ornament.
Well, what about fake trees? Can we get those too?
It really doesn't matter. What we're doing is we're going to Christmas tree lots, Phil. The fake trees don't matter because they're obviously a lot more dangerous in that they are aluminum. Some of them are made out of aluminum, and a lot of them are made out of aluminum, and they're just the kinds of things that are just too dangerous. And it is a very unfortunate state of affairs, Phil. But we are now going to different tree lots throughout the Southland, throughout the Pacific Northwest, in conjunction with the Beaver Battalion of Oregon and some of the other police agencies. And we have been given permission to do this in a variety of cities. We will stop people going in, and we will simply say, we're not going to keep you from getting Christmas tree, but we simply are going to say, are you sure you want to do this? We're just going to put a friendly grip on the forearm, just a very firm grip on the forearm, gentle enough to be friendly, but firm enough to let you know that if you try, you know, to take another step, we could go to the next level.
Well, what if people still want to go in and get a tree?
Well, you don't go in and get a Christmas tree until we're done with you. But we'll tell you when you get to go in and get your Christmas tree. We give you pamphlets with pictures that do show the dramatic reenactments of these horrible events. And, Phil, there are photographs of children with tree branches that are stuck through the throat. There are photographs of children with Christmas tree branches that are right through the abdomen. And in the instance of the kid that was just impaled on about five different branches just hanging from the tree. And I tell you, the tree branches didn't stop swinging for a couple of days, and they got photographs of that.
I understand Christmas can be hazardous.
But you don't know in what ways.
Well, you're telling me about Christmas trees.
No, I'm talking about people burning alive, being thrown from windows, people being repeatedly rammed with cars, impalement on Christmas trees, people being shoved into trash compactors, putting their fingers into paper shredders.
And is this because they're drunk?
No, they're just, they're so festive and so joyous that they're just ramming each other with cars and this kind of thing. And so we have to stop it.
Are you, you're telling me that a man gets down in front of a car and another guy rams him with the car?
Because of the festive nature of the season, right. But the most important thing are these trees. If you want to see your kid with a tree branch through his brain, then go ahead and buy a tree.
Bill Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
You know what he means. When I'm feeling good and I'm feeling festive, I just want to repeatedly ram a guy against a brick wall with a car. And he's right. So Christmas is going to be that time of year. Be careful. Have fun. I know you're going to feel the urge to stick your hand directly into a blender and then turn it on, because I know it's just, it's that time of year. But be careful, all right? Because it is that time of year where we just want to put our faces into a floor fan. But remember that Christmas is also a time for safety, okay? The most dangerous season of the year, far outstripping the 4th of July, is Christmas. Because there's so many dangerous things that we love to do at Christmas time, and we could hurt ourselves. Like, you know, the tradition of throwing ourselves off a cliff. You know, the whole family, okay, let's go. And we just all leap down a 300-foot rock-strewn into a rock-strewn barranca. Stuff like that. So just please be very careful. Okay, 1-800-449-8686. Did you see the Sopranos last night? It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Do you know what happened, Craig? And all of you guys, you don't know? You know what I tell you? Well, it was actually, I thought they tied up all the loose ends, but it almost seemed perfunctory, didn't it? Okay, let's deal with Christopher's drug addiction. Okay, let's deal with the Junior's trial. Now we got to deal with Bobby Bacala and, you know, that ugly, frightening, scary sister of Tony's. If anybody needs to get whacked, it's her. Please, God, let it happen soon. I hope Bobby does it. Bobby's going to find out that she's screwing him somehow, because you know she's going to do something. She's going to rip him off or somehow do something to the poor guy. Watch what happens when Bobby finds out. He's going to take her out. She will be no more. Muerto. Muerte. You know, like that. 1-800, which one was Spanish and which one was Italian? 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686, pure exhibitionism.
David Hall is with us, and he joins us from, or are you at a Royal Three Par?
I'm on the driving range right now, Phil, yeah.
David is our Vice President of Syndication, talking about Christmas parties. I had been at, I'd been at a couple, well, I hadn't been at a couple, I've been at many, many Christmas parties down through the years, and I had said on my show that I didn't think they were very valuable. Do you agree?
Well, I think that company Christmas parties are valuable for me as an employer. I don't know how valuable they are for employees. But the thing that I look down upon for myself and for other managers is drinking. I don't like to drink at Christmas parties because I'm an executive and a manager of people. What I do see so often are employees who, after having a lot to drink, will come up to me and lie about how they like working for the company, or they'll lie about what a great boss I am or what ideas I have.
Now, why do you automatically assume they're lying?
Well, because they're at the Christmas party and they want to stay employed, so they've had a couple of drinks and they begin to talk about what a great guy I am. Nobody really likes their boss all that much. I am a firm believer that it's almost healthy to dislike your boss. But I got to know, Phil, I need information. And that's why I do encourage drinking at our Christmas parties. I encourage people to take a cab or to take a limousine home. but I do want them to drink, and I want them to drink a lot.
So they can give you information?
So they can get enough alcohol in them whereby they begin to tell me the truth. That's the key. I don't want to listen to somebody with a glass of white wine tell me what a great radio programmer I am. Tell me how they love this idea or that, how they're looking forward to working in my department, how it's a great party, how lucky they are to be with a company, because they're all lies. And
every single one of them are lies.
Not all of them.
Because the Christmas parties that I've been to, I'd like to think that when I walked up to a boss and expressed my appreciation for my employment, that I wasn't lying.
Everyone?
Maybe not everyone.
That's my point.
I guess you're selective, and I guess it depends on how well things are going.
People hate their jobs. They hate their coworkers, and they hate their boss. And that's what alcohol can eventually prove. And I say that, Phil, and I don't want to be a pessimist, and I certainly don't want to be somebody who is exploiting the employee. But I think we need to find these things out. I'd like to know where I stand with my employees. And only a Christmas party can help you do that. You ask them the honest question when they're sober, and they may not give you the answer.
Can I ask you, so you're saying that bosses serve booze at Christmas parties to get the tongues loosened of their employees?
I'm saying that I like to do that. I'm saying it's valuable for me. I don't know what other people do. But yes, I do encourage drinking, because the more liquor my employee consumes, the more honest they're going to be, the more honest they are, the more you know where you stand.
David G. Hall is the Vice President of Syndication for The Phil Hendry Show. We're talking about Christmas parties. People get drunk, and they also say nice things, though, don't they? They continue to exaggerate.
I'll tell them that they can be honest with me, and then they tell me stuff, and then I know. So if you say they exaggerate, I will say to them, especially when they're drunk, I'll say, come on, you can be honest with me. Tell me what you really think. That's when the floodgates open. And that's when they'll say something that I could use possibly against them.
Is it all done to use information?
No, not all of it, but some information you could use to their advantage if they really feel that they like working for you.
Are you being dishonest?
No, they're dishonest with me telling me how much they like me. I'm not a stupid man, Phil. I didn't become a radio programmer of the year by being a stupid man.
Well, I'm not saying you're stupid, but by encouraging your employees to drink a whole lot, you're trying to get the truth out of them. And if they don't drink enough, they'll just be complimenting you?
They'll be giving me a lot of baloney, yeah. The more they drink, the more honest they're likely to be. I call people on their horse manure, and these employees who get wasted and start telling me how much they like me, they drink some more, and suddenly the truth comes out. They hate my living guts.
All right.
And I give them a choice. Do you remember Mark Gibbons from the prep service?
Yeah.
Here's what I did, and I'll tell you this, Phil, because I want you to understand exactly how this all came down. Mark was telling me that he'd do anything to do a certain... I think he wanted to be in affiliate relations.
I remember, Mark, when he went over there, right?
Yes, he did. But let me tell you how he got there. He'd had a few drinks. He said he'd do anything to get into a new department, maybe work in affiliate relations or programming. So I told him, and I want you to understand, and I want your audience to understand, that this was an experiment. I said to him, so you'd do anything? And he said, yes, sir, I would. And so I said, and please understand, Phil, that this is the best way to find out if someone's lying to you. I said, I want to see your wife's breasts. And he thought I was kidding.
You said you want to see his wife's breasts.
Yes, I did. It was shocking. It was absolutely something he didn't expect. He thought I was kidding. I told him that I wasn't.
And you pruriently wanted to see her breasts?
No, I wanted to know what this guy was willing to do. You understand?
All right.
And so I told him that I wasn't kidding, and here's why it's not sexual harassment. She doesn't work for me, so I'm not harassing her. Because he threatened to take me to the labor board, and I told him, you do that, and you got no job.
Okay, I got to stop you right here, because it sounds to me like you're going to get yourself in trouble.
I'm not going to... What trouble? What do you mean?
You asked to see a man's wife's breasts. You said that you threatened that you would fire him if he went to the labor board.
It's not sexual harassment.
And you say it's not sexual harassment.
Because she didn't work for me. He did, she didn't.
All right, and then what happened?
I told him that I'll fire him if he went to the labor board. And he knew he was caught. So what we did was we found a corner of the cocktail lounge away from the main ballroom where we were having a party, and her back was to the room. She unbuttoned her blouse and she unhooked her bra.
You honestly made this man's wife show you?
Oh, come on, Phil. Don't. Please understand that what I'm saying is not about seeing a woman's breasts. It's about knowing how far a guy will go to be employed by me. And the only way you're going to get a guy to do that is if he's had a lot to drink.
You looked at this woman's breasts?
Yes, I did. And we did it tastefully. Now, hold on for a minute.
No, you looked at this. What, you actually had this guy's wife unbutton her blouse and look at her breasts.
Look, Phil, you make this sound so shocking. It's not shocking.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, it happens to be a management style that I employ to find out who is really in my corner, who is in my camp, and who is lying to me and going behind my back to some of the bigger names in the company. So, yes, she unhooked her brassiere and showed me her breasts, and I got a peek at them. Last year's party, true story, and I'll tell you something. Today, Mark Gibbons is one of our top affiliate relations guys. You do for me, I do for you. This is completely professional.
I can't understand why you haven't been sued for sexual harassment.
Do I need to repeat it?
Well, I mean, she doesn't work for you, but he does. This is like... This is using your position. It's...
I don't know how hard someone's going to work. I got to test them. That's why I love to see my employees drink. I love to see them drink. I love to see them get drunk. And then I love to see them do things when they're drunk to prove how much they like working for me. As long as they've got a ride home. As long as they're taking a limo or a cab.
And you're not kidding, are you?
No, I'm not. What am I kidding for? I'm golfing right now. I don't even want to be on your show.
So you asked a woman to show you her breasts.
Yeah, it was a corner of the cocktail lounge. I just sat there with my arms folded. I said, okay, let's get it off. I saw them, and that's that.
Well, congratulations. It's one of the most innovative scams.
No, it's not a scam.
No, it's the most innovative scam I ever heard to try to cop a peek at some woman's breasts.
Oh, so you think I'm a perv?
No, I don't think you're a perv. I just think it's a high school trick using all kinds of heaviosity concerning jobs.
Look, Phil, you make a point of not drinking at our Christmas party. I want to know why, and I think I have the answer. Because you're afraid. You're afraid to be truthful.
I don't like getting drunk at Christmas parties because I don't want to be loose around the people that employ me. You're right.
That's right. You're afraid. Well, I'll get to the truth.
Well, you ain't telling my wife to show you her breasts.
I wouldn't want to see your wife's breasts. I'd like to see her ass.
Yeah. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Out of bounds.
And now more on the Phil Henry Show.
If you've just discovered our show, welcome. And you may have heard of our show. Somebody may have said to you, as they often do when I hear people say to me, oh, I turned a friend of mine onto your show. And I said, really, how did you describe the show? They said, well, you're the guy that does the funny voices, and these people call in and they get so mad. You're the person who does those funny voices, and I still can't believe that people call in and don't know it's you. Well, that's how people have traditionally seen our show. We do an awful lot on this show. We do much, much more than just goofing on callers. But that is the aspect of our program that I think has made it as famous as it is, or as infamous as it is, or as renowned as it is, or as well known, either inside the business or outside the business, as it is. And perhaps you've noticed over the last 3-4 days that we have backed away from taking those phone calls that some people have identified as the signature piece of our radio show. And we're doing that for a reason, because we want, frankly, to free ourselves a little bit. Sometimes it is a constricting thing to do a radio show and sculpt material that's not only really enjoyable for the audience, but also is just clever enough that it's going to get people to call and interact with a made-up voice, which is what I do on my show. And I can tell you, I've been doing this for 12 years, and no matter how much I explain it, now, no matter how often I say, well, I'm the one doing the voice of the character, people don't get it. They don't understand. I don't blame them. Nobody's ever done it before. Now, some people have attempted, after hearing my show, what they've done is they've attempted to have a friend do the voice of the characters. Or they have two or three people who are actors who do the voice of the characters. Or in the case of was it Dick Clark Productions? Who was that? The people in New York. Radio, what is it called? They did a thing where they had actors that morning shows could hire to play the part of different guests, and then people would call in thinking that they're calling a real person. I took great exception to that, and still do. That was an absolute and utter appropriation of what we have done. And I actually got an email from one of the principals in the company saying, well, we're shocked, Phil, that you would accuse us of, oh, come on. Are you kidding me? What's the name of that company? U.S. United Stations, that's it. United Stations. In any event, the fact of the matter has remained for all these 12 years that despite the efforts of United Stations or any other show, we're the only guys that do what we do. However, having said all of that, I have grown weary of doing only that. And whether our traditional fan base likes it or not, we're not going to do only that anymore. We're going to sort of diffuse, not diffuse, that's the wrong word. We're going to scatter or spray or spread or explode or splash or all those other porn star terms, our talent and our ability across a wide spectrum of possibility. We're not just going to do those things like voices that chump people. We're not going to constrain ourselves. We're not going to contract. We're not going to straitjacket ourselves into one kind of a thing. And we're going to become known for other things as well on this radio show. I have always believed you gotta change, man. You gotta roll. You gotta move. If you stay the same, the audience may not dig it, but or the audience will probably love you, and maybe you'll be able to make a great living. But at the end of the day, at the end of your life, you're gonna look at yourself and you're gonna blow your brains out. I did that for like how many years? It was just like tiring, man. You know. So hopefully we'll do the new things that we do and retain our audience. I think we will. But the fact of the matter remains, we're going to continue to experiment in other directions, not just in the world of, quote, chumping the phone callers, which is fun and is funny, and much of our material, especially on our Best Of CDs, is centered around that. Speaking of that, we've got an advance order on our Best Of CDs that is tremendous. We thank you. Close to 1,000 already. Advance order. By the way, our number 877-616-7445, all the money we make for the sale of our CD goes to My Friend's Place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids. The service that United Stations uses is called Comedy on Demand, and is that still in existence? They're still doing it. They're still using the phony baloney voices. There's a way to do it, and there's a specific way to point the material, and there's specific things you have to do in order to maintain the level of phone call activity that we have for 12 solid years. And if you think I'm going to tell you what those things are, well, how would you like to see my penis too? Because that ain't going to happen. You're just going to have to figure it out for yourselves. Or you can do something else. Try something original. Try coming up with your own thing and do that. Leave me alone and what we do on our show. Thank you very much. Okay, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. What were you telling me, Janice, about women that beat the hell out of their husbands and, like, take a hacksaw? Oh, here it is. Cheating chances. 20% of married women and 37% of married men have been unfaithful. No kidding. If you saw The Sopranos last night, you know that Carmela has finally had it up to here with Tony. She finally can't stand it anymore. The cheating, the conniving, the going around behind her back. And the one-legged woman, that was it. That's finally, it's not coincidental, like two episodes after Tony had a one-legged woman that Carmela finally said, you've made a fool of me long enough. You've chumped me long enough. He got it on with a one-legged babe on this couch, and then she just lit up one of her Pall Mall straights and told Tony to get lost. Remember that? So Carmella's had it up to here, and she had this big, impassioned scene. It was a fantastic scene. Wait till you see it, Craig. Some of the best acting that you will ever see anywhere. Edie Falco tonight. She's great. But he says something to her in the middle of her self-righteous going on and on and on about his cheating. He says to her, you knew who I was when you married me. You knew the life that I had been involved in. You knew who my father was. You knew who my uncle was. You knew who your father was. You know exactly what this life was. And on top of that, you didn't scream when I bought this big house and I bought the big pool and I got the big cars. And two seasons ago when she was sitting there with the priest saying, I've taken all of these wonderful things and I'm living a life of hypocrisy. Remember that whole thing with the priest? And she said, my husband's involved in organized crime, but I've looked the other way for comfort. And he said it to her last night. Now, she blew past that. She said, well, you're not listening to what I'm saying. But the fact of the matter remains, that's exactly what Carmella did. She whored herself for the pool in the 6,000-square-foot home. When we come back, we'd like to know how many of you ladies have spread your legs for a big house. 1-800-449-I'M-KIDDING. Kind of an interesting point of view, though, isn't it? Got a man, can do some things, he's got a job, he's got some money, he's your man, you love him. You love him. And maybe you don't know why you love him. Hey, he's a hard-working son of a bitch, he's got a great position. Women love a man who has a power base in the world. Women have always loved men who can fend for themselves and who have a little base of power in the world. Doesn't have to be a big one, but women love men who know how to accrue things, because it's a symbol and it's a sign of how well they can take care of their families. So there's nothing wrong with a woman marrying a guy because he's, quote, got dough. That represents something. It represents a level of power. I'm going to have to stop now, otherwise I'm going to be making the logical comparisons between a hooker and a John. I don't want to do that, and I love my wife much more than that. And I'm sure you love your wife much more than that, too, don't you? Just go watch The Sopranos tonight on the rerun. Listen to what Tony says, and you tell me. I said to my wife, the last time I threw out of the car, I said, you knew who I was when you married me. I threw you out of the car on our first date while it was moving. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Don't judge me by the rocks that I got. I'm still Jenny on the block. Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, what I was saying was that the icicle lights on our street, just about every house has got them now.
They're all over, yeah.
And we have always used the multicolored lights, and I've got those from Sears. We got the 3-inch bulbs back in 1962.
Everybody's got the icicle lights. What do you think of them?
Well, I don't like them at all. And I have never liked them, and especially now that everybody has icicle lights. And nobody uses the multicolored bulbs, and I will never use any other kind, especially this white light, the icicle deal. I keep ours up all year round, and then I turn them on and see which ones are burned out, and we replace them, and we'll never put up icicle lights. I'll never put them up. And I think that they are...
Why are you against icicle lights? Not that it's any big deal. You can do anything you want. Why are you against the icicle lights?
I just think they are extreme... They are the obvious manifestation of women who have taken over their husbands who traditionally take care of the outside of the house.
We have icicle lights at our house.
Well, that says a lot, doesn't it?
Now, I don't know what it says, but we got them, and we have them because my wife likes them. And
well, that's the point I'm trying to make, all right?
Well, hold on, and we hire a guy to come out, and he hangs them up. I think they look nice.
Be honest with me. Do you like them as much as the colored lights?
Not really.
All right, see? Let me explain something to you.
All right, before you do, am I right in assuming that you're going to say that this is a female-inspired thing?
This is a man who can't control one last area of his home, which is the outside of his home, the garden area, the pool area, or the front lawn. And these areas have traditionally been under the control or the maintenance or the care of the husband. And now women, who I think have no reason really to begin to tell men what lights to put up, they have enough to take care of in the house. Now women, who have no reason, are telling men the lights to use.
Why do you call this a female-only thing?
They basically show the woman has control. Trying to make the outside of the house look feminine is one of these Martha Stewart situations.
You're kidding, right?
Why would I be?
Martha Stewart, she's the one? So we're gonna blame that one on her, too?
Let me explain something to you, sir. Martha Stewart has done a great job, but she is also knocked away a lot of traditions, and she's got herself in trouble with the FTA, too. I hope you know that, and the SEC. I hope you know that.
That doesn't mean anything about her putting lights up. I know she's got herself in trouble.
Well,
she can go to prison for things she did with the SEC. Doesn't mean that she had a lousy show or that she shouldn't put up icicle lights.
Well, I think these things, they show how women are just taking it away from men. Now, I have multicolored lights to show.
What are you showing?
Basically, that I still have my genitalia.
Well, so you identify with the colored...
But I can hear the tone in your voice. You're condescending to me, aren't you?
Well, no. I believe that you believe what you're saying.
But you think I'm just a crazy old bastard, don't you?
No, I don't. But I do think that you're making a major deal out of icicle lights. I mean, they're here to stay, and that's all you can do.
Well, I won't put them up. And I'll tell you something. You could torture me till there's blood in my mouth. I'll never put them up. And I wanted to make the comment, and your producer said it was all right, that any man who has icicle lights on the outside of his house is flirting with homosexuality and the attendant cross-dressing, and you need counseling.
That's me.
Go straight to hell.
Yeah, okay, pal. If you have icicle lights on the outside of your house, you're a homosexual. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. You need a checkup from the neck up. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
You know, after that Sopranos last night, so we have articles all over the place about affairs and how to mend affairs and whether or not you can have an affair and be married and what do you got to do to... Hello?
Yes, sir.
You were the man who just hung up on me, right?
Yes, I did, because I didn't feel that I was being respected. If you'd like to listen to what I have to say.
Sir, I listened to what you had to say. You said that icicle lights on the house mean that the man is a homosexual.
Yes, I did, but I get the distinct impression that you thought that I was crazy.
Well, I do have the distinct impression, and you're getting the right impression. I think you're nuts.
You think I'm nuts? I'm a Korean War veteran. Do you think I'm nuts now?
No, sir, I don't think you're nuts because you're a Korean War veteran. I think you're nuts because you think that... icicle lights on the house mean you're a homosexual. That's the stupidest thing I think I've heard all day.
Well, let me tell you something, sir. The women who take over...
Just because a woman runs a house doesn't mean the husband's a homosexual.
Well, what do you call it when a woman tells a man to kind of what to do outside because the yard is where a man is supposed to be? And God damn it.
What a fruit. All right. Where was I? Okay. Marriages can survive affairs, according to this one imbecilic survey, which I'm not particularly interested in seeing. See, here's the whole thing about having an affair and having a what?
You did not hear me.
What do you got to say, man? I'm all ears. What do you got to say?
In 1962...
You went to Sears and bought the multicolored 3-inch bulbs, and they've been looking fantastic ever since...
Yes, in 1962, but I nailed them to the house, and now they stay up.
Great. Got good nails, huh?
The point that I'm trying to make, sir, is that I put the bulbs up in 19... Oh, go straight to the living hell.
What a jackball. I don't want any more calls from him. So here we got this marvelous opportunity to look at affairs and sex and love, and what do you want now?
To know why you hung up on me.
I didn't, you did.
You're a lying fag.
Okay. So they say that 85% of all couples, if they talk about, just do yourself a big rip-roaring favor and don't have one, you idiot. I say that with all due respect. I got a couple of friends who've been married over 20 years. That's pretty cool. I don't know whether they cheated on their wives. I doubt it. I don't think they have. I've never cheated on my wife. You know, that's how you keep life simple. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. And if you think it's some kind of a natural urge that a man has to, he must cheat because there's no such thing as monogamy, yeah, there is such a thing as monogamy. You have to put those instincts aside. You got to be in other words, you got to be a man. You got to be a man. A guy that cheats on his wife isn't a man. And I'll tell you something else, as long as I'm lecturing everybody here on the Phil Hendry Show, this is lecture day, it's Monday, this is where I tell you how to live. If you have kids, you don't get a divorce. What do you think of that? If you have kids, and they are people that you are responsible for, then it looks like you're just going to have to stick it out there, man, until the kids go to school, because you don't have a right to your happiness. And I don't know that anybody else cares. So, raise your kids, do the right thing, come home to them, and if it sucks, try suck it on your thumb. All right, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. I don't know why I'm bent out of shape about that, but it just, you know. My father cheated on my mother, okay? You want it? You want the truth? There it is. My father cheated on my mother. You see, years ago...
Hello? Sir?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to make sure I heard you right. You have the white icicle lights on your house.
Yes.
Yep, you're gay.
My father cheated on my mother, and eventually they split up, and the whole thing was not very pleasant for an 11-year-old boy. So believe me, keep it from happening, and the kids will be happy. You'll feel better about yourself. You won't have to deal with these surveys about how you can talk it through. You know that you want to, I'll tell you what you're looking forward to, man. If you do cheat on your wife and then you tell her all about it and you talk it through. Kathy Lee Gifford left a lucrative career so she could go home and be on call 24 hours a day torturing the old man she lives with because he cheated on her. In other words, she didn't have enough time going into the studio during the week. So she quit her job so she could be at home full time making him feel bad. Right now, I have no idea what's going on, but I'm sure she's spending much of her time making that old guy feel like a warmed-over turd. Up in the morning, just giving him that look. He's scurrying around trying to do the housework. He's trying to take the kids to school. He's doing the shopping. She's laying in bed till 11, 12. Anything that he can do so that she'll forgive him. She'll never forgive you. Or when she does forgive you, she won't tell you that she did because she's getting such great service. See what I'm saying? So what you got to do is you have to just not do it anymore. Just don't do it anymore. Or don't do it in the first place. Or don't get married. These guys that get married like 6, 7, 8 times, can you somebody explain that to me? What is that? Well, you know, there's the old saying, why buy a cow when milk's so cheap? What are you getting married for? Just live with her. You don't have to turn over your money, your property. What are you, stupid? Am I the only guy that ever figured this out? You get married 6, 7 times. Why? When you got to do a prenup, you're going to get community property, you're going to have lawyers coming out of your ass every which way and twice on Sundays because you married her? And the reason for that was what? Because I loved her. Yeah, huh? Right. Hey, pal, tell that to your preacher. Tell it to your attorney. Tell her. Don't feed me that. Because I really loved her. On wife number 6, he really, really loved her. And don't have any kids. If you're one of those schmucks that's married 6, 7, just do yourself a favor. Don't, and do the kid a bigger favor. Don't bring anybody into this world who's going to have you as a dad. You loser. Just have yourself a good time. Don't marry anybody. Use a condom. Get a vasectomy. Take a switchblade knife down there, whatever you need to do. And live the life of a bachelor. And then you won't have to change. And by the way, this is another, just a personal opinion of mine. If you're not married to a woman, it's impossible to cheat on her. If you're not married to a woman, it's impossible to cheat on her. Let me repeat that so you guys can feel good about this. Because I'm not telling you, number one, you see, don't get married, just have a relationship. You know, there's no perks. There are many perks of not being married. And one of the perks is it's impossible to be unfaithful to somebody that you're not married to. It's impossible. How can you be unfaithful to somebody you're not married to? You can't. You're not married to them. Well, we have a committed relationship. Blow it out your ass. How about that with your committed relationship? Your committed relationship is you're married. Now, I understand that there are certain members of communities who don't get married and they have kids and they live together as man and wife. I don't want to say which ethnic persuasion we're talking about here, but my good friend Mario, I just got off the phone with him. No, I'm kidding. But you know how there's certain people that it's cool in the eyes of God and all that crap. That's fine. Whatever you think is marriage, but then you're married. And you might as well have that thing sanctified or solidified or blessed in front of the in the government, in front of the eyes of the community, in front of the eyes of society. People say, well, if I love her, why should I get married? Well, marriage doesn't exist unless the entire tribe has gathered and has witnessed it. That's marriage. You cannot be married just, quote, common law. That's crap. Or, you know, I'm going to live with her and I'm really committed to her and we're going to have children together, but we don't feel like having a ceremony. Well, you're not married. Why is that? Because the entire basis of marriage, starts from the witnessing of the union by the tribe. In this case, the society, the American society. The tribe has to gather. The tribe has to give its blessing. That's marriage. It's been going on like that since the days of tribes, since we were all running around in jock straps while the Africans were performing open heart surgery. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want to remind you about that one, but it's true. Since all the white people were running around in jock straps and like feeding scraps of kibble to their pet rhino, meanwhile the Native Americans and Africans were practicing open heart surgery and they were smelting iron. So you can't be married unless you go down to the justice of the peace. Got it? Number two, if you're not married, you can't cheat on a woman. So if you're just dating, you can go ahead and cheat on her. If you tell her you're not going to cheat on her, you can still cheat on her. Because if she believes that, she's not too bright. And this, by the way, goes the same for women. I thought we had a committed relationship. No, we don't have a committed relationship. That's called a ring on my finger and a wedding vow. That's our committed relationship. Until then, go wash and wax your truck again. Go admire your bowling trophies. So that's a good part. And if you have kids, get married. Be a decent human being. Don't smell like something that, you know, don't smell with a lot of burrito on you, man. Just go and get married, all right? Quit smelling like the kitchen over there at Irwapin's. Just go and get married. Now, that's how you do it. That's how you make the kids happy. That's how you stay happy. That's how the whole world just smiles. Once you get married, you know, be faithful to your wife. If you feel like cheating, don't get married. Just live with her and go out with all, chase a bunch of other skirt. Don't have any kids, though. See? So you do it. See, sooner or later, we're going to have to leave the white trash days behind, man. We got to just, sooner or later, we got to go to the new millennium means something. And to me, new millennium means we leave all that white trash stuff behind and we start observing, you know, ceremonies like marriage and faithfulness in marriage. And then, you know, not getting divorced if you have kids. Just a couple of new things I think will be a real kick. 1-800-449-8686. So Tony Soprano, you know, he's flat out of luck. What she should have done is shot him last night. I thought that's what was going to happen. I thought she was going to come down the stairs with a shotgun and then blown his head off, and then we'd be spared a fifth season. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Controlled by the International Jewish Media Conspiracy.
Bob, you have a Christmas tree lot in upstate New York. We thank you for joining us. What's the temperature in New York right now?
Billy, right now the weather is 8 degrees wind chill. It's about 16 degrees right now in Utica, New York.
And it sounds like business is brisk?
It's pretty good. We sell a lot of trees this time of year, yes, sir.
What kind of trees? And the reason why we want to talk to you, you don't sell green Christmas trees, do you?
No, I do not, Phil.
Tell me why.
Phil, about 5 years ago, I lost both of my legs in an automobile accident. My car went under a tractor trailer. It actually slid underneath the gasoline tanker. The car exploded around me. I was pulled free, but as a result of my injuries, I was in a wheelchair with both legs amputated below the knee. I was kept alive during that period of time, Phil, on a variety of respirators, a variety of mechanisms. Today, my wheelchair is a chair that is hydraulic, it's electric, it's highly maneuverable. What I'm saying is, the last couple of years, Phil, I've come to respect technology. I don't have my legs today, but I've got a wheelchair, and a wheelchair that is, as I say, hydraulic, it is electric, and just a boon to my existence. I became a guy respecting the technology to the point where I wanted nothing in my life, especially at the holiday, that reminded me of the past and reminded me of the bad old days when men, especially Western men, crawled over the hills of Europe as cavemen. That's why we only sell. They just brought in some Taco Bell. Forgive me, Phil.
No problem.
I sell only flocked or aluminum trees, and the reason why is as what I just told you. I believe in the future. I don't believe in the past.
Why do green living Christmas trees remind you of the past?
Because they're a reminder of our primitive past when we didn't have the technology to make aluminum trees or flocked trees, when we walked around more as animals than as men. It reminds me and many others of a time when we wore animal skins and lived in caves and competed with other animals for food. We got excited by the sight of fire. Phil, the real reason why the green Christmas tree mocks the holiday season is because it represents the past. And the organization today that is more in love with the past than any other organization is Al-Qaeda, which has tried to destroy our country. And I think I make a very good case, and I was interviewed in a local newspaper and in the Mohawk Valley Television. I make a very good case, I think, that if you buy a green Christmas tree...
That you support Al-Qaeda?
Not that you support Al-Qaeda, but that in an unconscious way...
You're lending comfort to them?
You stand for the same things they do.
All right, so a green Christmas tree is all of a sudden a representation of terrorism.
No, well, you're misunderstanding.
Well, I know exactly what you're saying. You're saying if we buy a green Christmas tree, then we are in love with the past. And that represents the past is really Al-Qaeda, which I've said on my show.
I know you have.
I mean, I've said that Al-Qaeda and the Muslim culture of the Middle East is all tied to like the 15th, 14th, 13th century.
Yes, you have. And so I'm taking that one step further and saying that everything in our life that smacks of a return to the sort of, quote, pastoral days of the past, Phil, can be destructive. And green Christmas trees personally represent to me laying underneath that truck and burning until I was pulled free. And that's a group.
God, that's gruesome.
That, it may be, Phil, but that's what a green. When I see a green Christmas tree, I flash back to my car sliding under an oil tanker, exploding, and then burning around me until I was pulled free by paramedics.
Why would you say that I know what you said.
Well, because of my chair.
No, but I know you said your chair and how you were saved, naturally, was medical technology that saved you.
Yes, it was.
All right. But how does a green Christmas tree remind you of the accident?
Because I think, at its very heart and soul, Christmas represents, if you have a green Christmas tree, and you do that traditional Dickensian thing, and what is that? That's hot buttered rums. That's dressing up and caroling door to door. That is reading a Christmas carol and Miracle on 34th Street, and It's a Wonderful Life. People think that's good, and I understand how they might. But really, when you do that, you are embracing the past, and you're embracing a time when animals were skinned alive and human beings were enslaved. And I don't embrace those times anymore, Phil. Not after my car slid under a gasoline tanker and exploded. Since that day, I revel in every moment. I have a wonderful wheelchair. I got a great life, a great wife, great kids. But you won't see me put a green Christmas tree in my house, because if I do, I would rather be tortured until my mouth filled with blood than have something like that in my house. And I think I speak for a lot of Americans.
Well, man, you don't speak for me.
Well, that's fine. You're entitled to. But as long as you got a green Christmas tree in your house, you would rather return to a day when women worked 12, 14-hour shifts in waist shirt factories and were locked in when fires started. You remember the Triangle waist shirt fire, Phil?
Yeah, 1911. It was a horrible fire that killed many women who were working there, and it ushered in OSHA standards.
That's right. You want to go back to the days when women can't get out, they're locked in, and they're burned alive in a factory? That's what a green Christmas tree represents to me. And I can.
Well, hold on for a minute, man. You are going down some pretty strange routes. You're saying now that not only does a green Christmas tree represent you burning underneath an oil tanker, but the Triangle shirtwaist fire of 1910 in New York.
But that's exactly what I'm saying.
So a green Christmas tree, basically, if I could just cut through what you're saying, represents the times when there were no child labor laws.
There were no OSHA standards at all. It's green. It's crisp. It comes. I like trees. But when you bring them into your house, you're trying to bring a primitiveness into your home. Do you understand what I'm saying, Phil? At our Christmas tree lot, we sell flocked and aluminum trees only, because we only look to the future. And I would never, ever disrespect or disgrace anyone by selling them a green Christmas tree. That's basically like saying, here is a green Christmas tree, and oh yeah, can I have your kids for all of next week to sexually abuse and work 15-hour days? I wouldn't do that. And
wait a second. Now sexually abusing children.
Well, Phil, there was a time when it was legal to abuse children. I mean, there were no child labor laws. You just referenced it yourself.
Child labor laws where they had kids working 7-day weeks and working 16-hour days. Sexual abuse?
There was nothing. There was nothing called child abuse laws in those days. Put a green Christmas tree in your living room, and you might as well be feeding a kid gruel and then taking him upstairs. And for me...
Oh, come on. I got a green Christmas tree in my house.
I'm not saying you necessarily. You're a member of the media. You understand things. But for me, a green Christmas... Hey. That's $20. For me, a green...
Am I keeping you from business?
No, I got one of these talking Santa Clauses, and this guy was picking up... What's that? It's $20. For me, the green Christmas tree represents something that is so such a throwback. Such a Dickensian, Victorian throwback that to put one of those things in my house, I might as well hang pigs in the city square and skin them alive, wall up kittens behind buildings, and all of the things. We might as well go back to the times when Albert Fish brutally murdered 118 kids and nobody...
Come on!
Hold on for a minute. Hey, that's $20. So the things that I'm saying.
All right, I feel like you're. The green Christmas tree is a tradition.
And Phil, it is a myth. It's a myth. Flat trees, aluminum trees, are the real spirit of Christmas. Green Christmas trees are a horrific reminder of the Gothic horror of the Dark Ages, when a man purely for his religious beliefs had an Iron Maiden strapped around his head and his face slowly pierced by iron bars. It's a reminder of a time when they would hang people like Galileo by his thumbs in the city square because he had the audacity to say the earth revolved around the sun and not the other way around. It's a reminder of a time when Columbus would skewer 6 or 7 Indians on one lance and then stick them out in the noonday sun. That's what a green Christmas tree means to me.
Jesus!
That's right. Read it and weep.
All right, 1-800-449-8686.
What the hell you think?
1-800-449-8686.
And you call that a Merry Christmas? No, I call it hell. I call it reliving hate. You want the 7 foot or the 8 foot?
I gotta leave. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Making pot brownies.
Show 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show. We're just reading Smoke and Gun about Winona Ryder. She's shooting up Demerol, what, between her toes or something, and she has been busting open capsules of mescaline and shooting it directly into her eyeball. But she's going to be fine. She's going to be fine. I think she's changing her name back to Horowitz, isn't she? You know, if all of these movie stars would just have the name that they were born with, we'd have a very colorful and, not to mention, crowded marquee up there. Because a lot of these cats have names like Rabinowitz and, you know, they're named after beers. Anheuser-Busch, and they changed their name to Smith, Brown, Ford, Chevy, Volvo, Volva, Kresge, Kreskin. Cool. My real name is Hendry, H-E-N-D-R-I-E. It's Scottish. I thought about changing my name. After the very first gig I got in radio, they wanted to change my name. The guy said something like, how about we call you Phil Brown? I said, no, Hendry's good. That's the name I'll use. Although it is a pain in the ass now, because you don't really want to be flashing that credit card 2 o'clock in the morning. You feel like warmed over death and you're in there buying a bottle of NyQuil and, oh, are you Phil Henry from the radio? You look great with the eyes bloodshot and the bedroom slippers on and just come from Denny's, huh? Getting one of those grand slams and now you're going to, are you drunk or are you just sick? Winona Ryder, who's love? In Love's case, what's that mean? Prescribed, these are injectable Demerol syringes and sedative hypnotics. Ryder received Percocet, Xanax, and other drugs from some doctor. Following Ryder's November 6th conviction on grand theft and vandalism charges, apparently one of her friends said she feels like she's in the crucible. She's got a problem. It's not a physical addiction. It's a compulsion. In stripping a Los Angeles doctor of his medical license for gross incompetence and repeated negligent acts, California state regulators concluded that the physician improperly provided drugs to Courtney Love and Winona Ryder. in a blistering October 28th revocation order. The Medical Board of California cited Dr. Jules Lussman for numerous acts of unprofessional conduct, including the excessive prescription of narcotics. The Medical Board's 41-page decision notes that Lussman's behavior might have been the subplot of a Raymond Chandler novel, one that focused on a doctor catering to the demands of wealthy and or famous drug seekers. The doctor in question working on a cash-and-carry basis. It was like those guys in the those old gangster movies. All right, I'll go and I'll get you to fixed up, okay? And they take you to some crooked doctor who will operate on a guy and get the slug out of his arm. You know, we need doctors like that, don't we? As long as it's a slug you're pulling out of a guy's arm, but, like, what, emergency plastic surgery? Who's the guy that did the job on Michael Jackson to make him look like Helen Bonham Carter in Planet of the Apes? That guy's kisser, he looks like just like one of the monkeys now on Planet of the Apes. And don't give me that racist stuff. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I ain't talking about black. I'm talking about monkey. Oh, my God. That guy ought to be in prison. The guy that did that job, of course, nobody knows. Why is that a big secret? Who did the job on Michael Jackson's face? And when can I hire him? Because it's just great work. And how come Winona Ryder gets a doctor that's prescribing all of those drugs? Why don't I know a guy like that? You know what the whole thing is with these guys? They want to know movie stars. They want to be the doctor to the movie star. And as long as he was giving her dope, as long as he was given her sedative hypnotics, which, by the way, is another word for cannabis sativa. It's another word for marijuana, sedative hypnotic. As long as he's doing that, then, you know, they're friends of his, and he can come over for cocktail parties. He's the goofy doc. He's sitting in the corner with a glass of wine. And, can you talk to my friend Mary? You know, he's just the hip Hollywood doctor. A lot of guys go to medical school just so they can do that. They don't want to help anybody. They don't want to go, you know, this Albert Schweitzer, hang down your head, Tom Dooley. These guys, they want to go directly to Hollywood and start carving up somebody's nose. They want to make some guy look like Bubbles the Chimp so fast that, you know, and Michael Jackson has given a guy hundreds of thousands to make him look like Bubbles the freaking Chimp. And the other thing about these doctors, they can come over to the party, but only if they bring drugs. So it's understood. How much you think it cost Michael Jackson to look like Bonzo the freaking Chimp? Thousands and thousands of dollars to have that kisser sculpted into Roddy McDowell's Planet of the Apes Part 2 beneath your ape. Jesus! Okay, so she's on dope, huh? Well, good for her. Demerol, syringes, sedative hypnotics. Courtney Love. Now, there's a woman I never got it about her. How come people think she's good-looking? Courtney Love actually got... There was a rep there for a while that she was really hot. Yeah, I guess if you like that sort of 4 in the morning, we're closing up now look. If you like that kind of, come on back to my room. You like... Courtney Love is just a knockout. If you dig that sort of, you know, that... 5 a.m., come back to my room, we'll do it up, help me find a vein type of a chick. Jesus. Getting tired of people telling me what's beautiful. If you're any kind of a man, you'd feel the same way too. Kidding, of course. I only know what I like. But I get so sick and tired of them telling us what's good looking, right, guys? Wrong? Okay. Well, go ahead, man. Just like what you like, don't like what you don't like, and help her find a vein. Courtney Love. She's probably a fantastic performer, great musician. She's got a kisser on her, man. It's kind of that mottled alcoholic look. Look, baby, doing that much dope, shooting up that much smack, and living that kind of a life over a period of years, you'll forgive me if I don't think you're all that hot anymore. Is it okay with you, or am I supposed to think you're just centerfold material, even though you've been smoking rock after rock and just doing bag after bag? Your teeth are falling out, your face has got that mottled alcohol look, and oh yeah, those implants, well, they look like they're leaking to me. Pardon me. There are better looking women than some of these movie stars. Some of them we're married to if we just open our damn eyes up. You get a good look at them up close. Believe me, because I have. It ain't no picnic, man. It ain't no block party. You know, if you hang out, just, I'm not saying that I know people, because I don't know anybody, but they invite me to these premieres or parties or whatever, and you get a good look at some of these women up close, and you clowns, oh, man, I'm not going to mention any names, but you guys pining away for some of these movie stars, believe me, you're better off just going to the beach. Just lay on the beach for about 6 hours, man. You'll find something infinitely better looking. And Jennifer Lopez, let's start in on her, okay? No, I'm kidding. All right, 1-800, talk about a fat ass. Okay, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Whitney Houston's dealer. Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Go ahead, Ralph. So you're looking for Christmas decorations?
I'll go through some things between looking for Christmas decorations. I'm only, I've been married, my wife, and I've been married for 3 years. And we had a great time, so I was in the garage looking for these decorations. I found pictures of her ex-husband who died before she and I were married. He died of a heart attack.
Okay.
Now he's dead, and she's married to me, and I'm going through all of our stuff. And there's at least four envelopes of pictures of him with her or alone. I'll tell you, somebody might as well kick me in the head.
Well, why? Because...
Well, let me tell you why. Because she's married to me now, but she's holding on to pictures of this guy.
Well, a woman is entitled to have her past. The guy died. He was part of her life. She's entitled to her past.
Well, let me explain something to you, Mr. Eric. There's an old saying that says, move over, let the big dogs eat. I'm her husband now. That's why they have a mourning period. Now she's mourning him. She doesn't get to come back out here and look at these pictures and then come back in the house and with a few of them and then pleasure herself while she's looking at them while she's married to me. I didn't marry her and her dead husband.
Wait a minute. You have reason to believe she's going out getting pictures of him, bringing them into the house, and then doing that?
Well, why else would she be doing it? I mean...
She was married to the guy.
Well, why would she be doing it now that she's married to me?
Why would she be looking at pictures of him? I don't know. Maybe it's reminiscing or something.
See, all of that is just... That's not the right answer. If you're married to a man, I think there's a mourning period. That's why they call it a mourning period. So that you could take some time to mourn whoever it was that you were in love with, or who you were married to, then you sort of put that to rest, you put them in the ground, and then you move on. And that's why they call it a mourning period, but you don't hold on to picture that person so that the person you're married to now can find these pictures. See what I'm saying? It's just, I don't think it's right. And I've got my moral dilemma is, should I tell her that I burned the pictures, or should I say that they just got lost, let her find out?
Well, sir, you're telling me you burned these pictures?
Oh, yes, sir. I mean, I burned these pictures because I've got the right to be her only husband.
You burned this man that she was married to, you burned the pictures.
Well, I'm not saying I burned all of them. Maybe she's got others, I don't know. I found an envelope, probably 40, 50 pictures.
Well, she was saving those pictures, man, because they probably were a part of her life. I mean, this guy was a part of her life.
Well, you have to see, to me, I don't care that she knows that she is to be married. What I care about is her holding on to these pictures.
Why?
Because they are a reminder of something that no longer exists. Okay, I mean, I wouldn't have married her if I'd known she was going to hang on to this guy. So if my attorney looks at this and says that's technically cheating, I could divorce her and she wouldn't owe me any of the community property.
Your attorney? I mean, dude, she isn't cheating on you.
Then why she got pictures of this guy?
This guy she was married to. It's obvious that it's somebody who is really important to her, and it's obvious that she wants to hold on to these pictures. And I don't know about your feelings, but it's probable that she wasn't thinking that you were going to find these pictures. What were you doing out there?
I told her I was looking at for Christmas decorations.
Okay, so you're looking for Christmas decorations, and you found pictures of your wife's ex-husband, who's now dead.
That's right. He died of a heart attack about 3 years before Molly and I got married.
What's your wife's name, Molly?
That's right.
So you burned him, huh?
Well, the moral dilemma I've got, should I tell her that I burned him? Or should I?
Yeah, I think you ought to tell her that you burned them. I think you should tell her you burned the pictures of her ex-husband.
Or should I say that, should I not say anything and just have her find, not be able to find them?
I would tell her that you burned them. Why did you burn them?
So that, first of all, see, there's grounds of divorce there. I decided that I would burn them so that I would not be tempted to divorce.
Because if you had the pictures, that you would be tempted to divorce her.
That's right, sir.
All right, here's what you ought to do, man. You ought to go and tell her that you burned the pictures of her ex-husband. Don't say they got lost. Tell her that that you burned them. Tell her that it hurt you when you saw these pictures and that you momentarily got crazy.
Well, I don't think I was crazy. I think I was in the right.
Okay, good for you. You were in the right. Then I would also tell your attorney just to back off. You got this guy at a retainer or whatever. You don't have grounds for a divorce based on her cheating on you.
Why do you say that?
Because she's got pictures of her ex-husband?
Isn't that technically cheating?
No, it's not.
Well, it seems to me that she's married to me. Emotionally, she'd be connected to me. But if she's married still to her husband, her ex-husband, that guy's name is Ross, then she'd be emotionally connected to him. That's technically cheating on me. I think if I keep those pictures around, I think what she's saying is that she is, while she's married to me, she's still emotionally connected to him. At best, she's married to two men.
The guy's dead. She kept some pictures, you nut.
Well, I don't think you've seen a whole picture of this thing, man. I think I got a case.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, tell Larry Parker I said hello.
What the hell are you talking about? She should have been honest with me.
You goofy idiot. My wife's pictures of her ex-husband. Should I tell her I burned them or let her just find out? You know, my wife found some pictures, some old pictures of mine. She enjoyed it thoroughly. She shared them with me. We had a good laugh. They were graphic pictures of me having sex with other women, and my wife just went, ha, 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 isn't this great? And we laughed and laughed and laughed till well into the night. Then, in the morning, when I woke up with a barbecue fork through my neck, I just called the doctor, and I was fine. Yeah. Be glad it's just a picture of the guy standing in the snow, man, and it's not a picture of, you know, her and, like, three other guys. My wife found some very graphic pictures there and in the box, and we went into the house. We talked it out. She told me she was hurt, but she felt better about it. Then I shared with her all of the old videotapes that I have of all my other girlfriends, and we just giggled and laughed till the sun came up. Now, the gunshot wound, the doctor told me later, would heal. After she kneecapped me, I'm doing great. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. So whether I'm being kneecapped by my wife or checking out Winona Ryder's drug habits, you're listening to The Phil Hendry Show. And by the way, I also showed my wife the snuff movie I was in, and she just laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Communist influenced.
And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
Our Best Of 2002 CD available on our website at philhendryshow.com, philhendryshow.com. Order it now, and it'll be here in time for Christmas or there or wherever. I think it's available, yeah, today, December the 9th. So the CD is available as of today, and we've been taking advance orders. The number is 1-877-616-7445. I have no idea whether the link is back up to my friend's place, but I hope it is. 1-877, maybe someday one of the members of my staff will tell me. 877-616-7445 is the number to call to order our CD. And if you'd like, you can also go to our souvenir shop and pick up a Ted's of Beverly Hills bowling short. How about that? Bowling shorts. gee, just a slip of the tongue, and there's a whole new idea. Bowling shorts. Talk about lame looking. What the hell would those look like? Hey, how about some bowling shorts? I mean, are they just big blue stripes? Big baggy-ass shorts with big blue stripes down the side of them. Do people bowl in shorts? They should start. Anything to liven that dopey-looking game up. All of those slacks and crew cuts, forget it. I think they ought to be bowling in those big fat pants. And they ought to bring back bumper bowl or something. I used to take the kids when they were small to the bowling alley in Simi Valley, and they would put bumpers in the gutters so the balls could never go anywhere. But, you know, and they loved it. And I loved it. I bowled a 300 game with bumpers. And the kids were down with that, so bring it back. Get more people out bowling. So philedryshow.com is our website address. Please, if you have a mind to, get the best of the Phil Henry Show 2002 CD for Christmas. All the money goes to my friend's place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood, California. It's Chapter 11 for United Airlines. I got an email today from a American Airlines flight attendant who said, thank you very much for praising the service on American Airlines, Phil. Well, I was very happy to do it, although I took a phone call from someone who hated my living guts for bagging on United Airlines, so I can't win for losing. I was a real jackass to that lady because I said, and I quote, United Airlines service was so pathetically bad there toward the end, no wonder they went belly up. And I ain't kidding either. So what is it to hear about multi-million-dollar companies that you're not allowed to say anything about them? I guess it is like kicking them when they're down. All right, how about I kick an airline while they're up? How about I bag on, well, I already did, America West. Yeah, their toilets don't flush. Our CD link is up, I am told, from our website. So you can access our CD by way of the Internet on our website, or you can call that number. I just wanted to get an update on that. Anyway, you make millions and millions of dollars. It is my opinion that a certain thing is. Therefore, I have the constitutional right, and I have a license to say what my opinion is. My opinion is United Airlines, forget it. Fly the friendly skies, yeah. Last time I flew that airline, they weren't friendly. Their service was a little below par, shall we say. And the plane smelled of body odor. Somebody's armpit. They filed for bankruptcy on Monday, the largest such case ever in the global airline industry, after high costs and low airfares left the world's number two carrier with too much debt and not enough cash. High costs and low airfares. And the airfares are about where they were 30 years ago. Do you realize this? I mean, airfares are about where they were 30 years ago. You can fly to San Francisco, for instance, from Los Angeles, for about the same amount of money that it cost you in 1972. That's how competitive it is, and that's how tough you got to be to stick it out in that business. And carriers like United Airlines are throwbacks. They're behemoths from a day gone by. Where's Pan Am? Where's TWA? Where's American Airlines? Oh, you mean they're still flying? Where's Braniff? Goodbye. What's another airline? Hundreds, millions, thousands, gone. Why? Because people just want to get on a thing and fly and go and forget about it. Just get me there and get me there fast and get me there cheap. Ain't a bad way to go. I don't fly that way personally. Personally, I like service. I want somebody to hold my hand as I'm whisked down the moving escalator thing. You know, that moving floorway thing? I don't want to have to move at all. I want to get off the plane, have a thing just take me out to my car. Put me in my car. Pick me up, pat me on the back, burp me. Did you ever see that? I think there was a Looney Tunes or something where thing power. I don't know what the hell it was. It was some wacky freaking assembly line that picked up Daffy Duck and burped him and put a bonnet on him. It was out of sight, man. One of the great all-time characters in television, Daffy Duck. Now, I want to get off the plane. I want that conveyor belt to pick me up right there. I want to sit down, have a smoke, look around, have a cocktail waitress serve me something, anything, I don't care what. Chris is reminding me now of that bloody cartoon. They put Daffy and Porky in the same diaper, crammed them into the same diaper. That was a great cartoon. Take me out to the car, dump me in the thing, and off we go. Because we figured out when we flew to Vegas last time, I could have driven and gotten there in the same amount of time. And that is nuts. And don't tell me it's less stressful flying, because it ain't. Why? Why am I doing it? I'm going to drive to LAX, stand around for an hour and a half, then get the bag on the plane, then get on the plane, then sit down, then wait, and then they taxi, then they take off, then they fly, then they land, then they wait at the gate, then they get to the gate, then you get off the plane, and you grab in your bag, and you go down to the thing. And if you travel with my wife, you're checking your bags. I'm sorry, she just does. He said, have we ever heard of carry-on? No? Oh, it's a nice concept.
No, I like to carry on things. I don't know what I'm going to wear. What temperature do you think it is?
I don't know.
Do you think it's cold? Will we be going out? What kind of dinner are we going to? Is it going to be formal?
I'm just wearing jeans. I'm wearing those bowling shorts and just a multicolored Hawaiian shirt. I don't know. And then you get the bag. Then you get in the car. And then you drive to the hotel. It takes you about the same amount of time it would if you drove the stinking freeway to get to Vegas. Get in your car. Throw the bags in there. Boom, boom, you're at the front door. And it's a lot more fun, don't you think? I don't know. It just... If you're driving, you're talking, you're looking, you're having, you're smoking, you're drinking, you're eating, you're stopping, you're getting whatever the hell you want to eat when you want to eat it. You're not having to look at some flight attendant staring back at you like, don't look at me, pal. All I got are peanuts. You know? Jesus. That's about it, too. Bags of peanuts. So but flying's cool, man, if you're going, international. Best airline, Air New Zealand. That's the best one I ever flew. Hey, the other thing, when you go to Vegas in the car, you can see the world's largest thermometer on your way there. It's a big damn thermometer. You can stop in Barstow, stop in Baker, get those burgers. Air New Zealand, out of sight. And then the other one that I think is that I personally like was Mexicana. That's right, Mexicana. Guess where I got turned on to Don Julio Blanco? Now, it wasn't Mexicana Airlines, but it was in Mexico after I took a Mexicana flight. Mexicana Airlines turned me on to Don Julio Blanco. Man, that'd be out of sight. I would recommend them. Well, I do recommend them. Cardinal's clandestine Vatican visit. The ripples from the Catholic sex abuse scandal continue to spread with developments in Boston, Los Angeles, and in Rome. Although the discussions of the Vatican were behind closed doors, as is traditionally the case. The Boston Archdiocese revealed that the leader of Boston's Roman Catholics, Cardinal Bernard Law, is in Rome on a trip for which the purpose is not being revealed. Maybe he's getting stripped of his cardinalhood. What do you think of that? See, if John Paul, if he really wanted to make a statement, I don't know what his story is and what American Catholics expect of that guy. I don't know whether he's what he is. But the word we're getting is that he went back to the Vatican to turn in his walking papers, or to get them, I should say. He's turning in his cardinal badge. He's turning in the hat. They got to fly back. You didn't know that? They got to fly to Rome and turn in the big hat. Here it is. Okay. Where's the big thing? Where's the big... Can I get my deposit back on the hat? Well, no, you can't. Well, what do you... Where's the big staff? It's back in by. Well, you got to go back and get that. So he's back. He's getting his deposit back on his hat and his staff. And he is going to... You know, he's going to become just another schmuck priest. Some parishioner. Some pastoral parish priest. Seriously, I think that guy's going to come back stripped. And I don't just mean stripped of his cardinalhood. I don't think he's going to be wearing clothes when he gets off the plane. I think he went back there for the ritual fondlement. Because I think the Pope is going to fondle him for all the crap that he pulled in Boston. He's going to get off the Concorde in a diaper. I must fondle you for the things you've done, so go ahead, get them down. Oh, that's the Beverly Hillbillies theme, excuse me. Well, same difference. So how about that Bernard Law? Boy, this guy, how come he's in worse trouble than Mahoney? I guess they really got some cover-up on him, don't they? This guy was moving those priests around like chess pieces. Pervert over here, sick, twisted bastard over there, scum sucker over here, and he's switching them between churches instead of just turning them over to the cops, which if he'd done it in the first place, maybe none of this crap would have happened. Just remember, come and listen to a story about a man named Jed. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Vagisil for the mind.